got like 3 feet of air that time.
All right, hello and welcome to Off Track Racing Show presented by Bike Magazine, bikemag.com. Results not typical. We're coming at you guys live right now from the birthplace of the bike park. We're in beautiful Whistler, BC. And by that, I mean we're in a one-bedroom apartment looking out on the west side road trails. And it's opening day of the bike park. I'm your show host, Tristan Merrick. And joining me today in studio is my co-host, writer extraordinaire and 650B loving, Seb Kemp. Seb, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Tristan.
Well, opening day has come and gone. We've been waiting since, well, Thanksgiving last year. I mean, what do you think? I know you had a little bit of a late start with today. Everything was kind of conspiring against you, but you still made it out. You still got your runs in before a little bit of a rain shower this afternoon. What are you thinking?
Yeah, the first opening day I think I've managed to make in 9 or 8 years. I think it's 9 years I've been here in Whistler and always missed the opening day through to injury or terrible circumstance. But although I was late getting the bike park is unbelievable right now. It's almost like it opened. It's almost like it's opened 2 months late. It's the conditions are absolutely superb. Every single trail was open, and the queues were like middle of crankworks.
It was mind-blowing. I kind of, you know, I'm not going to lie. It was Friday morning. It's opening day. It's a long weekend, but most people get the Monday off. I kind of took my time coming into the, coming in there. Showed up around noon, and I was kind of wish I'd pulled the 10 a.m. card. Get in, get out, get your laps in, and, the queues were full, which is awesome to see. I was fortunate enough to ride the bike park last weekend filming for the first Whistler team video that went up online there, how to create a team, Force of Nature.
Good work, video.
Fun little one to get people fired up, and I know last week blown away to see how good it is. And I think it's just because the trails are so soft. The dirt is soft. They haven't seen the riders. They've got that fresh winter feel. I mean, the first few days when the bike park's open, it's amazing. I mean, you can, carve into any corner as hard as you want. Everything's crisp. It's freshly raked. There is a few rocks hiding on the rougher tracks, though, from snow melt. Definitely had a few close calls where, some melon-sized rocks were lurking in the bushes if you're going to cut the corner. So, but first day of the bike park, and we are on the eve of the first Enduro World Series. Enduro, the hottest word on the internet for the last, 6 months? I mean, everybody wanted to throw it out. You no longer go for a bike ride or a trail ride. It's, I'm going for an Enduro ride, or I'm going for a training Enduro ride.
It's exciting this weekend. We've got the Enduro. We've got the first cross-country eliminator, the other huge race.
Must have missed that in my Twitter feed.
Yeah, the cross-country eliminator. Anyway, yeah, we've got the open in the bike park.
Is Lopes there? Is he...
No, Lopes is into Enduro.
Oh.
Lopes is in Italy right now in La Puntala, and he's going to put his money down, and I'm going to be interested to see how he gets on FC.
I've seen a few tweets. I mean, he's a fierce competitor. We've, fortunate enough being in Whistler, we've seen him dominate, the Air DH for so many years. He's tried his hand last year at the Enduro, actually the last past two seasons. He's a competitor through and through. I mean, I don't even know what his age is. I don't want to take a stab at that one because, he'll be here later on this summer, and I'm sure he would track us down if we offended him on that. But he's not getting any younger, but he's not getting any slower. I think he could definitely be a bit of a dark horse in this weekend at Punta Ala, the opening round. So it's very interesting. And just going in to let listeners know how to stay up to date with the show, you can follow us on Twitter at off_track MTB. So you can ask any questions there. If you have anything you want to add in, be part of the show, hit us up there. If you also, you can email us at tristan.merrick@gmail.com. We'll be switching over to an off-track email address in the near future. This is show number one, so we're kind of just going by going with what we got right now. And of course, the best way to stay up to date with everything is our Instagram account. And we've got our man on the ground. We've got Sven Martin running that. So he's going to be giving you guys a behind-the-scenes look at each and every round that he's going to be at. So he's going to be at most of the Enduro World Series rounds, except for the ones that there is a bit of a conflict with the UCI DH World Cups that are happening. So he'll be there giving you those candid moments in classic Sven form. and it's great to have him part of that team. So those are the ways that you guys can stay up to date with us. You can chime in on segments. We'll be keeping up to date as far as who we'll have in studio and everything else. So let's break this down. Off track, it's a racing show. We're going to go on each and every round of the Enduro World Series. The plan is we'll record on Monday after all the action's unfolded. We're going to try and have our guests in studio. We're going to try and have, we'll be calling in with people like Sven Martin and race winners, whoever we can kind of get on depending on their schedule, and just chat to them about how things are going, how their season's going. You know, the idea with this is you're going to listen, learn, and laugh. We don't want to just find out exactly how their race run was and that their suspension was hooking up and that their tires were great and they want to thank their team, Muscle Milk, Pro Circuit, yada, yada, yada. We're really wanting to get in depth, and that's why I said we have you joining us. This is, you know, we want an open conversation with these people, and for the listeners, we want you guys to be able to listen to these and learn something new about the riders, not just see them in a picture form or you hear their podium speech. We want to open it up and learn a lot more.
So we're going to try our best to get under the sheets with Aaron Gwynn. Under the sheets with, like, a better example, maybe in.
I don't know if we'd get under the sheets with Aaron Gwynn until maybe there's, you know, something on a finger.
Put a ring on a finger.
Put a ring on it. If you like it, put a ring on it. I think Specialized did that in the off season, so I think they've already got that one buttoned up. But speaking of Gwynn, hopefully everybody's checked out that new Aaron Gwynn Red Bull edit that just dropped this afternoon. That's
Clay Porter, Menace Creative.
Mind-blowing. Two bangers in one day. There's a Cole Seeley motocross video from Zakistation. Cole just destroying berms, putting that bike sideways, fifth gear wide open. It's artsy but tough, I would say. That's probably the best way to describe it.
That's a smart way. Whereas Gwynn is taking some old-school hucking and putting some very new speed into it. Like,
kind of terrifying to see what's going to happen come first round of the UCI World Cup downhill. That's Fort William. Seb, we are actually going to have you on the ground there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to be there trying to sober up after a Scotch-tasting tour around Scotland. So I'm going to end up in Fort William, and we hope to bring you lots of pit news and exciting undercover reportage from there.
Perfect, perfect. Well, we like the sounds of that. So, like we said, Seb and myself, we're going to be breaking down each round. Where the plan is that we're going to try and record every Monday after each round from here in Whistler. And why are we doing this? Well, we feel this is another way for you as listeners and enthusiasts of the sports to connect with the sport that you so thoroughly love. Rather than just, you know, going on to website A, going on to website B, and just looking at these race results, which really don't tell you much of a story. We want to be able to phone in and have the race winner on the phone so you can listen to that. You can hear about all these funny behind-the-scenes stories that go on.
I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Welcome back to the Off Track Podcast. I'm Tristan Merrick, and along for today's ride is Bike Mag's own Seb Kemp.
What do we think is going to happen?
I think what's more interesting is like the magnifying glass, the telescope, the crowd that's going to be watching these races also. Because these guys, these races, they've been happening for many, many years. A lot of the guys that are in the top now, they've been doing this. They know what they're doing. So what's interesting is how all of a sudden, the attention may change things and affect things along the way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new people in there. There's a lot of new people trying their hand at this. And that's going to mean more competition.
Yeah.
It's going to mean there's only one winner each weekend. So there's going to be a lot more disappointing faces.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be interesting. Guys are going to, especially with the downhill side, if guys struggle, you know, like right now we had Sea Otter Classic kicked off. I know that's not really a gauge for these guys, but they pretty much had another couple months off between that and Fort William. so they could show their cards a little bit at Sea Otter, see what happens, and go back to the drawing board and put in work. First Enduro is this weekend. You know, they're going to be able to do it, but if they're suffering on cardio, that's not just something, you know, I would say speed is maybe a little bit easier to find, that those 1 or 2 seconds here and there, but cardio to last a 5 to 6 hour event, yes, you're only racing 20 minutes of that event, is not something you just do. I mean, if they start working out on a regular basis, it's going to start to wear them down, and right now they need to be kind of in the groove already, and feeling good. And I would assume, especially because it's new, are these guys really going to be trying to peak for a particular race? Are they going to be trying to peak for the designations? You know, how, you know, on what, you know, what level is this race going to be on, the designations? You know, all these different rounds. So is it, are some guys going to be trying to train for particular ones? Obviously, we're going all over the place. You know, it's not just primarily European. We're going to be taking the Europeans that have dominated the sport, that have pioneered it, and pulling them into the North American side, which is very different.
Do you know what? I spoke to a few of the more established enduro races over the winter, and what's interesting is that some of them have always been very fit and have always had a good off season. They've trained, but there's some of them now that have really switched up their gear. Part of that is the fact that now there's something established for them to aim for. There's a world title for it. The second is there's increased competition. Like, some of these guys that have been doing it for years, they've seen that there's new faces coming in. They're seeing that there's serious professionals that are coming in from other categories and other formats and going to be racing. And they're like, I do not want to be beaten by these guys. And they've stepped up their game. I'm really interested to see at what level we're seeing people like Jérôme Clemence and Caroline Chazon has been training very serious this winter. For the last few years, she's been unbeaten, even in Enduro.
Yeah,
this winter, she told me, she says, I put my head down, I have a specific training regime. It's not like that she hasn't been training previous years, but this year she said she was devoting special time to training specifically, and also mentally training.
That's scary. That's just, like, I will say that, it's straight up scary with her, because we know right now she could probably get on a downhill bike, and no offense to all the women of the World Cup Tour, but we know she would be probably top three just in her current state. But we know why she doesn't race down anymore, because if she's doing it her way, which is requiring a lot of time and effort. She's already been there, done that, where most of these girls nowadays weren't even, I mean, they're still probably pooping in their diapers. She's coming and doing a new sport. It's new, it's fresh. I mean, it's the same with Julio. This is a guy who's been there, done that. He's always enjoyed riding bikes. But now that there's something to work towards, you know, this is the alien. He's got 10 world championships. He is the guy coming in where, you know, you can't count him out. He's a bit older than some of these young guns, but he's got the racecraft. He's got the experience behind him. And I think the dedication is going to be interesting. I mean, our first round is tomorrow, May 18th and 19th, and then there's going to be a little bit of a break off. These guys have got just over a month before they go to the next round over in Europe there. And it's the, I can pronounce that, Val d'Elios. I would assume that's how it's pronounced. That's probably butchered beyond belief, but...
Yeah, we've got the first three rounds in France. Italy, first round, and the next two rounds in France.
So. And then we're going into, you know, the first two rounds are established rounds. I mean, Super Enduro is the biggest out of all of them, the longest standing. And then we're going
in... Just correct, it's actually Fred Glow's races, and that's what Val d'Or's.
Yeah.
His was more his longer stand-in. Started almost 10 years ago.
Okay.
Super Enduro came around in 2004.
Yeah.
When Enrico Guala, I believe. Again, it's going to be terrible when people realize that we're pronouncing his name terribly.
I'm going to apologize beforehand right now. Being a primary, I'm being a North American kid, that's how it is. And then we're going to be going into Crankworx, France.
Should we just admit that being North American makes you stupid and me being English is just dumb?
Who's the far superior race, I guess? The French?
Should we just hand it to the French this time? And yeah. We're not going to get hassle from the French. But we're going to get hassle from the Americans and the English now.
That's...
What's worse?
I don't know. I think it's lose-lose. I you know what? Up front, I'll admit that, you know, we're going to be trying our best here, and obviously, there's no right answer at the end of the day. I mean, that is the nice thing about this podcast. We're just here. We're trying to bench race, bring everything together for you guys as listeners to hear what's going on.
But if anyone's got phonetic spellings they want to tweet to us,
yeah,
at offtrackmtb,
yeah,
please go ahead.
Make sure you get the underscore between off and track, or send the emails through. Those are the ways we want to keep you guys connected. And if you'd like to see anything on the show, just hit us up there. You know, this is a work in progress, and we want to grow and improve and make a show where you guys each and every time there's a round that you're looking forward to listening to us when it goes up onto our iTunes account later on in the week prior to, or after that. But back to the race schedule here. And then we're going off to Crankworx, France, Les Two Elp. Kind of a completely new round. They've got lots of festivals there. I mean, Crankworx came in there last year. They had bike festivals prior to that. This year, they've kind of combined a whole bunch of different things. So that's another stop of the Enduro World Series is happening there.
Yeah, it's interesting. We always have the Mountain of Hell there, which is a master, in some eyes, was previously seen as into this broad category of Enduro, but people have really... There's been an issue with definition of Enduro. So Mountain of Hell, just for those that aren't familiar with it, hundreds of crazy people stand on top of a glacier at the very top of a mountain and all start at once and they pile down the mountain. The first person to get to the bottom is the winner, and it looks like an absolutely brilliantly scary race.
The Dirt TV video from there last year I thought was one of the best videos that I'd seen last summer. There's a shale section, and I just remember seeing like footage of Dan Atherton, fully out of control through there. And unlike North American events where they every inch of that course is taped, in Europe it's like, okay, this is where you start, there's a bit of tape over here, another kilometer down, another down there. That shale section, there was like just a couple little lines that they had to go between, foot out, flat out, probably going 60k down this, chunks of shale. I mean, it's, you know, that's the kind of thing as a rider I'm like, get me there, I want to go race that event, I would like to be there just for that aspect. It's going to be interesting, I guess. Mountain of Hell is no, I guess it's, I don't think it's any longer now. It's been kind of adapted into the...
Mountain of Hell's gone off. It's his own event now again, which it always kind of was. But yeah, Crankworx with the dudes out, they brought in an Enduro-specific event. So Enduro, very broadly speaking now, is a multi-stage race where you have predominantly downhill runs on a large course, and riders have to propel themselves to the start of all those special stages.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a bit different here. It looks like a fresh, entirely new race.
So that, you know, going into one of these courses that haven't been raced normally beforehand, I think that's where we're going to see a lot of different results. Whereas the long-standing events, a lot of the European riders are going to have the advantage coming in there. They've ridden there, they've trained there. That's where they do their little winter vacation escape, suspension testing. Now we're going to be going into some different events. And then later on in July, we're going to Winter Park, Colorado. They'll be holding the next stop there, the fourth stop on the Enduro World Series. Again, some high-altitude racing. I've heard good things about the courses last year from the Santa Cruz Nomads team. I know they quite thoroughly enjoyed that one. So it would be interesting how that plays out. We're kind of coming into the North American-style racing, which... There's so many Enduro series in North America. It's going to be very interesting how it plays out the next few years. I'm very thankful that we have the Enduro World Series. It's kind of setting the bar, especially when they came out this winter and put down what the rule book is, which we'll touch on a little bit later in the show, but putting down how their rules want to be so the rest of the North American Enduro series can kind of latch onto that, so we can have like a good system so we can produce riders and nurture and get them going, so we have a good future within this racing, rather than, hey, it's new, it's different, let's just go in from there. Let's start set, you know, you look at a lot of the other countries, I mean, especially where you're from, Seb, there's amazing cycling federation over in the UK, same with Australia. You know, unfortunately in Canada, not so much. And you know, even in the United States, I mean, the United States used to be one of the best racing out there. I mean, and then unfortunately things kind of went downhill back in the 90s, and they just haven't recovered. And I mean, thank God they have Aaron Gwynn on the downhill side, but is that enough to breathe life back into that program? So
it is unbelievable seeing the amount of different races that have popped up. Enduro races.
There's a Northwest series. There's an Oregon series. There's a California series. There's a SoCal series. There's a NorCal series.
The Mountain series. It's pretty good. I mean, but the Colorado... I've heard from a few people, we will talk about the difference in North America and European idea of Enduro later on in the show, but I've heard from some good people, some very good things from the Colorado race, which I think Ross Schnell has had a lot to do. He's a rider that's been over to Europe and saw how it was done and tried to bring that back. One interesting thing that they've always done, though, at that race is have a chainless race. The first stage was chainless.
Very, very true, and I've heard many, like, a lot of riders really like that. I think that that takes the, I mean, we have them here on a regular basis in Whistler. We're fortunate. We have the Fat Wednesday race series, one of the best race local race series out there, and we have two chainless races a year, and it's interesting to see, you take your chain off, you know, you're not pedaling down the hill. What kind of bike handling skills come into play? And I, you know, with this round happening at Winter Park, you know, no chain on, pure momentum. You can't just power your way down the hill. It's a cool way to see how true bike handling skills take over.
It's interesting looking at the websites here on the Colorado Freeride Festival site for the round four of the Enduro World Series. Is it looks like it's going to be a three-day race.
Hmm.
They've got two stages on day one, two on stage two, and the last on day three, which is, I'm interested to see if it remains that way. It's a bit different than it's how it's been done. So
there's nothing about courses yet, is there?
There's nothing about courses yet.
So. And that, you know, that's I guess, an also very interesting point bringing up there. I know we'll speak more about it later on, is we're talking about these, you know, is there courses, is there not courses? Some of these rounds, they announced a month out exactly what the tracks are going to be. You know, slightly really unfair, actually, for everybody that isn't living there. These guys that are local, they know what's going on, they know what's happening, they can go out and train it. It's a huge advantage, and I think, you know, one big part of, like, the beginning of Enduro was you didn't know what was coming up, right? Especially with Trans-Provence a few years ago. Here's your stage, look at your map, and you're learning on the fly, and that's another bit of that racecraft, that bike handling skill that an all-around mountain biker needs to have, is how fast can you go adapting on the fly, rather than I visualize this run in my head, I know exactly which bump's coming up, which rock's coming up, and they can, you know, they've already got their race run dialed in their head is how much training's going on. So looking at the Winter Park website right now, there's nothing about racetracks or anything with that. And then going into the next round, and that's our local round here, happening August 10th and 11th, Crankworx Whistler. And as far as I know, we have the biggest cash prize.
It's huge.
It's, and that's, you know, that's, I think, a big thing within this sport. I mean, everybody's bit on to what Enduro is and they want to be part of it. But Crankworx Whistler has really stepped up, in part with their sponsors, to really reward the riders. I mean, $10,000 for first place. You know, mountain bikers aren't making a lot of money, you know, and 10 grand in your pocket for coming to a race. You know, we're going to showcase some amazing trails here. I know they're still working on exactly what's going on. I know the fourth stage last year was probably one of the most fun stages ever, top of the world, right down through into the bike park. It was a demanding event, and
there was 10 kilometers, almost, what was it, 1600 meters total descent.
Yeah, it was a good way. You know, there were some hiccups at the stages beforehand, and you know, I definitely know Crankworx Whistler has learned from those little mistakes. They're definitely trying to improve. And that's, I think it shows exactly, there's, you know, the events, the Super Enduros and the stuff in Europe, they've done it for so many years. They're not so much under the microscope. They have a good system. They know how it works. Whereas Crankworx Whistler last year, you know what? They tried to do it exactly how they thought it should get done. And unfortunately, you know what? There was some mismanaged little things in there. And it was hard. The Europeans weren't particularly fond of it. And I think this year, I know they've worked a lot with since the Enduro World Series has been created, they have their board of directors, they have their board of riders that they consult with. So nothing should be, no rock should be left unturned with that one. So $10,000 for that one. Again, that's going to be, I think that's going to be a great show, and a great race. The nice thing with that one, because it's Crankworx Whistler, those will be televised or live streamed online to a certain degree.
It's going to be a big, it's going to be a big event, I think, particularly for the North American side of Enduro.
Yeah.
We're going to get all the European riders here. All the riders, all the teams are going to come for that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
going to be great to see them on, in many ways, unfamiliar territory. And it'll be very interesting to see how Crane Works deal with that. And $10,000? People are going to be trying hard.
10% rule.
10% in the bar.
10%. But, you know, we'll talk more with that, with the training. But, I mean, right away afterwards, we're going into Val d'Isère, which is the Enduro Des Nations. And with, you know, it's the world champs of the Enduro. I love the fact that they chose Des Nations, very similar to the motocross world. They've, you know, chosen that name rather than call it the world champs. It is a bit of a team event. Each country fields their particular riders to go over for that. And try their best. They're racing for their country, and they're racing for their personal bragging rights. But they're racing for their country at the end of the day, and that's going to be very interesting. I mean, a lot of this, the enduro racing itself this year, it's a blank slate. We don't know what to expect. There's no blueprint of what's happened in the past. History hasn't been written yet. So going forward, you know, every round's going to be new, and especially with the first one. I mean, like I keep saying, the first one's this weekend. It's going to be really hard to pick who's going to be a favorite for, right? You know, are we going to see the guys that we know of have signed a lot of new big deals over the winter come in and show dominance? Or are we going to see the guys that, you know what, just go to work? They're the blue-collared, lunchbox-carrying people that are just, this is just another day in the job for them. They don't care what color's painted on their helmet. They've got their supporter, they've got a good support team, they've got a good bike, they know exactly how to go about it. And then into the final round, later on in October, another the Super Enduro Pro from Final Ligurie.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be wrapping up the series. I mean, 7 rounds of amazing Enduro action. And we'll be breaking them down each and every Monday after those rounds happen. We'll be getting race winners on the phone. We'll have industry personnel in town. So we'll be going through each and every one of those. So, I mean, that's the all the rounds there. Again, like we said, we'll be going over the UCI World Cup downhill rounds also. So we'll be doing a pre-race show right before Fort William, which you'll be able to pick that up on iTunes. And this podcast that we're currently doing right now will be on iTunes also. So let's break things down a little bit here first. Let's go into the Enduro World Series, kind of their board of directors, the heavy hitters of who's on the team, the EMBA. So looking at this list right now, Seb, I mean, maybe you can take us through these guys. I know you have a personal relationship with Chris Ball, who's kind of the guy that really got the ball rolling on this. No pun intended there, but this is the man that... He was trying to take this to the UCI. The UCI didn't really, for whatever reason, want to latch onto it. And now it's doing its own thing. And you know, he's publicly said he's got nothing against the UCI. There's no issue. Eventually, maybe in the future, something could happen again. But as of right now, the Enduro World Series, it's Chris Ball's world. This is his baby from start to finish. And I think he's enlisted some great people. But... maybe you take it away.
Like Chris Ball, I was with him and we were racing the Trans-Provence last September together, and we've got lots of mutual friends, so I've heard great things about Chris Ball before, and then to actually hang out with the guy, like, the guy is as solid as a rock. Like, if I was a woman, I'd want to marry him straight away. He's absolutely brilliant. Like, such a clear thinking, very respectable, high morals kind of guy, but very funny as well. So he was there.
You battled it. You battled it. Not to go across here, but you and Sven and him battled it out for the Trans-Provence.
Fatter, older, race category. Yeah.
industry rider category, I think would be the best way to call it, I guess.
Yeah, we did.
Then there's that young Toby kid that, you know, he snaked you on that. But.
Yeah, me, Chris Ball, and Sven, we did have our own little battle that we've been like, Twittering to each other for about 6 months prior who was going to win. And then, yeah, it was interesting. I took the first few days out, I think, because I caught them off guard. And then after that, like, I got to see up close how Chris Ball rides. Like, he's an ex-World Cup racer. I mean, he's not a slouch. He's not just come from it. He's absolutely unreal on a bike. I saw one stage, he started in front of me. I called him up, and the only reason I called him up because he had a huge crash. And then he said, oh, let's just ride down together. And so he's following me down. And at the bottom of the stage, I realized that his bars were at about 20 or 30 degrees off straight. He'd ridden that whole stage, and I'm flat out, and I know he's right behind me, and I can hear him.
You can feel the heat.
I could feel the heat. I was like, oh my God. And I gave everything I could. And that guy came through with his bike in a very sad state of affairs. So yeah, the guy is a very good biker as well. He was on the UCI as their technical delegate. Halfway through Trans-Provence, he got a phone call from the UCI saying, we will not be going ahead with our plans to start an Enduro series in 2013. Chris Bullard worked so hard to get that established that he'd been through some other big things in that time, and I think it was quite interesting to be there with him that week. And he just said, you know what, screw it, I'm leaving the UCI. We had lots of drunken wine fuel meat chats that week, and I think Sven really badgered him, and as he does, and Ash Smith from Trans-Provence, they all said, you know, like, you should take this on and take what he'd already in many ways tried to form and make it real. And what he had tried to do already, I think, was the best way, and we're seeing it now, is he'd taken those established organizers, those established races, Fred Glow, who I think it's fair to say he invented the Enduro format for mountain bikes.
Modernized it, I guess, would be probably the best absolutely. Way to take it, right?
He'd been doing motorbike Enduros for years and decided it looked like a really fun thing to do. He started doing these Tribe 10,000 events. 10,000 came from that was the amount of descending you did every weekend. He started that and became this huge ball rolling, and that inspired someone like Enrico Guala, who started the Super Enduro races in Italy. An incredibly successful, great-looking race series. I'd love to get to some of those, actually. It brilliant. So those are two of the characters. The fourth is Darren Conner, and he's the Crankworx events organizer. Crankworx right now, I know we're biased because we're in Whistler, but I think without a doubt it's one of the biggest mountain bike events out there. Anyone who's not been to Crankworx, believe the hype. You come and you see that it's not just mountain bikers that are coming here. It's not just the thousands of dollars. It's not just the glitz and the glamour that some people don't like. It's the fact that thousands and thousands and thousands of non-mountain bikers are drawn to Whistler for that 10 days of event, and they come and watch this event. So Crankworx is an incredibly important event in mountain biking calendar. So Chris Ball, as the umbrella, he took all those people together who already had established races, and he said, right, let's do something, the World Series. And I don't think there's four better people out there to
no,
do what they're doing.
He did the right way. Rather than come in and try and create all these rounds from scratch, which would be a nightmare, just the idea of trying to start a round up here and there and all over the place, seven independent rounds. He's partnered with these races that are already highly established. They have the groundwork, they have the courses, they have the support for each of those rounds. Each of these rounds has their own, you know, event crew that puts it on. So they have their own event managers. It's already in place, and it's just a matter of, like you said, it's an umbrella now of going over all these things. And it's exciting to see. I don't see any of the rounds that are going to happen this year. None of them are going to be duds. You know, I don't think any rider is going to come out of them and go, well, I didn't have fun there. You know, course selection is going to be interesting, how it plays out, how they've chosen each thing. And, you know, I think regardless of what's going to happen in the year, the Europeans are going to probably favor the European courses. The North Americans are going to favor the North American courses. There's going to be, but at the end of the day, I think every round is going to be very solid. So
yeah, I mean, it's almost different than the UCI World Cup or cross country, where we get a revolving door of different events and different locations coming all the time. Sometimes they've never held a World Cup. We know there's very there's criteria for places, for locations to be able to hold.
There's a huge price tag. There's also a very huge price tag, as I've seen some numbers before.
Sometimes they don't have to be really established, great mountain bike events. I mean, look at some of the downhill World Cup rounds. not much going on there besides the World Cup. So it's a very different way of doing it. I think it's a very clever way of doing it, but it's also very brave what Chris Ball and the Enduro Mountain Bike Association have gone and done. And do you know what? For all the hype, people might be tired of the hype of Enduro. I really hope the absolute best for this race series, for those people alone, because I think they are doing, their heart is in the absolute right place to do it.
It's a passion project. Passion project, that's what Chris Ball decided to do. You know, he took it on himself, and like you said, he did amazing wonders within the downhill world, and due to unfortunate events, you know, he's on to the next step in life, and I think it's cool to see everybody's bought into it, and the support is there. It's, you know, it's interesting reading the press releases that they've put out, especially all the rounds. As far as I know, every single round has sold out, or the first round of their registration sold out. Just being a Whistler, I know that Crankworx has still got some more registration on June 1st, but when I talk, there's some more registration. It's probably about under about 40. So not many. So I know a lot of the Whistler locals kind of got caught off guard with that. They love that race, and you know, I think it's cool to see it's racing in our backyard. Each and every round, somebody, you don't have to have a license. You don't have to be a licensed rider to compete in the pro open category. So you could have somebody that's a full, you know, I'm going to say Kevin Phelps. Nobody's going to know that name on this podcast except the Whistler locals. That guy could probably destroy almost each and every one of these world enduro riders, because it's his backyard.
And he'll do it on a steel hardtail, and he'll do it in a plaid lumberjack shirt.
Yeah.
And we will have chopped a cord of wood in the morning before the race, and he will get home, and he will look after his two children. Like,
yeah. And we're not making this up, people. This guy is a legit person. He is the animal. He's riding a Dickie shorts and a plaid shirt, and he's just a smile on his face, cruising along, probably the most easygoing guy.
And that's the interesting thing about the Enduro. Yeah, you're right. It's open. It's the spirit of mountain biking that I think this Enduro thing's really embraced. And the organizers have really tried to reflect that in how they run their events.
Yeah, definitely. But let's go into the Enduro World Series Advisory Board. And this is where they have taken on, you know, they're wanting to put their best foot forward. They have taken on riders and industry personnel to help with the series, to make sure it's going in the right direction. You know, again, Chris Ball, rather than kind of this is the vision that he wants and this is the direction that he's going, he's partnered up with some very strong industry riders and competitors. I mean, right away we've got Tracy Mosley, we've got Curtis Keene, Jeremiah Bubar, Rob Roskopf. I mean, that guy's a legend himself. Mark Fitzsimmons and Jerome Clements. I mean, we could probably talk about another half hour on each of these riders, because they, you know, are legends, going to be legends, North American, European, industry. I mean, Ross Roskopf, I mean, this is the guy that has created the Santa Cruz Syndicate. I mean, it's not a race team, it's a family. I mean, they say that year after year. I mean, you still got Petey and Menard and Ratboy Racing.
And that guy, Roskopf's got a lot of very strong opinions on how racing should be and how he would like it seen, and how he has to deal with certain other organizational bodies, with his syndicate team. So it's very interesting to have him there as an advisor. Jeremy Bubar and Mark Fitzsimmons are both industry people. Mark Fitzsimmons from Fox, Jeremy Bubar from RockShox.
Yeah.
3%.
I'm sure he'll love saying that. We should actually say he's going to be here on Monday.
That's correct. He'll be our co-host on Monday. Unfortunately, we're losing you, Seb. You're going off to go make some money at a different paying job, because this one doesn't pay. And yeah, we'll have Jeremiah Bubar in the studio for Monday. And we're still working on our guests. So hopefully in the next day or so, we'll be updating those on Twitter, letting all you viewers know and listeners know exactly who we'll have on the show. Try and let you know before time, so if you have any questions, we can ask these riders and industry personnel exactly what's going on.
Okay, fellas, I think we can wheel and deal.
Welcome back to the Off Track Podcast. I'm Tristan Merrick, and along for the ride today is Bike Mag's own Seb Kemp.
Okay, and that kind of brings us into team talk, Seb. I mean, looking this year, we've got kind of two different things. There's the trade teams that have, you know, bought in, that are part of the Enduro World Series, that they've guaranteed, they've paid their fees so that riders are guaranteed a spot each and every round. And those are, you know, the big heavy hitters, GT Factory Racing, you know, Scott Enduro, Specialized, Yeti, Trek Factory Racing. And then also at the same time, the cool thing about this is there's a reserved riders list. So these are the kind of privateer guys of the world. Maybe they can't make each and every round because they've got to be making money for these. But guys that are still trying to, or guys and girls that are still going to try and be there, maybe just don't have the same level of support. So I think let's just dive straight into the team stuff. You know, each and every team is kind of fielded riders, where it's interesting to see overnight, you know, whereas in downhill, there's not a lot of spots anymore. Riders are fighting for their spots on these factory racing teams. Overnight, teams are born. Money is found where money doesn't exist.
It's been a scramble this winter. I don't know. I don't want to be the most cynical person out there, but it seems like there's been a scramble. There's places available, and people have jumped on them. It seems like there's new teams opened up, and people have filled them. It's a little bit different. We've got some established teams, though. There are some established teams out there. I think there's a great place to start because they've been an established team and they've got some of the most established riders who will probably do the best this year are the Cannondale Over Mountain team.
Yeah.
They have Jerome Clemence.
That is no guy to be... And it's funny, I never met him until Crankworks this year. You know, I do the announcing with that, so I had met him, chatting to him before some of this, you know, before the final stage, and chatted to him after the stage, and I mean, damn, the guy was even at the Whip-Off World Championships on Tuesday, and this is a, you know, European-based guy. He's probably never seen jumps that big in that sort of man-made format out there hanging out. And if you were to judge a book by his cover, looks are very deceiving with Jerome. You just see this guy, and you're like, he's not a very big guy.
He's a short guy. He doesn't necessarily look fit. He doesn't look tough. He doesn't look strong, but his skills on the bike surpass almost anybody else I've seen on a bicycle. It's absolutely brilliant. Like, the way he flows down the trail, he's popping and jumping, and he's so, so light on his feet. That's not a derogatory term there. He is just so light that he's just picking up and pumping and flowing down the trail brilliantly. But also on that team, they've got Ben Cruz, who is very different than Mr. Chirani. He's stocky, angry, funny, humorous, crazy North American who rides like he rides like he wants to punish the trail and punish his bike.
Yeah,
that guy though, however, has been training very hard. I think we're going to see some interesting stuff from him this year. If he can hold it together, painful the results he might come out with. Ben Cruz.
And it's been very interesting when talking about training. Some of these guys have been very open about what they're doing. You can log into Strava. You can see exactly what Curtis Keene's up to. You know, like, there's no secret what he's up to. You know, he's out clocking miles before 10 a.m. each and every morning. What's he doing? He's always out there on his 29er. And whereas there's other guys, there's no way to follow that. And it's going to be interesting how the year goes on. Does Curtis, you know, say Curtis's training tactics all of a sudden where, you know what, maybe he's not on Strava anymore. Maybe you're not following him. Maybe he's going to be, you know, putting GPSs on his bike and doing the same sort of rides, but it's not going to be open for each and every one of his competitors right now. I mean, I'm not racing the Enduro World Series, but I know I can go on Strava right now, and I can see how many kilometers he's been clocked in the last little bit, you know? Is he riding hard? Is he, you know, and you can't, as much as Strava isn't an accurate way to gauge somebody, you can see what their training regime is.
Yeah, you can see if they're out there on their bike clocking out serious miles, or if they're just like riding down to Denny's and DQ to like fill up on the easy stuff or down on the beach. Yeah.
Soft serve ice cream.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, let's talk about Curtis Keene.
I mean, what's to say about this guy? I mean, he is an animal. I mean, I think he's been around forever. From the longest time that I've started riding downhill bikes, he's been there. He's got the nickname, the American Dream. So he's kind of come into this, you know, it just sounds bad, but he was at the right place at the right time. Enduro has sprouted up where maybe his downhill career wasn't taking him in the path that he wanted to go anymore. You know, he's qualifying for World Cups. He works really, really hard, but that edge to be in the top 20 at a World Cup and then to be in the top 10 and top 5, it takes a special type of rider. Curtis is an extremely talented rider. He's almost the complete opposite of Jerome. He's a huge guy. He is very tall. He's got a lot of muscle behind him. He's the kind of guy that'll tear a freehub body off a bike from a standstill. You know, he's the NRA dragster at the quarter mile.
Yeah.
You do not want to race him for that. He's been very open with his training. He was very open. He was riding 26-inch wheel bikes for the longest time. And lo and behold, his sponsor brings out a 29er, and there's some bikes that are sitting in the closet right now, no pun intended with that, that are the smaller wheel size. Also, at the same time, talking about Curtis, you know,
he mixed it up this winter. Last year was his first real foray, and he was still doing some like downhill stuff. He raced some of the World Cups. I think they were more domestic. He raced a lot of crankworks, a lot of other downhill races that you get to, but he was really trying the enduro thing and just kind of experimenting. And he did really well. He won the North American Enduro Series.
Yeah.
North American Enduro Series seems to be very much on power and fitness. At the end of the year, Curtis went out and he went to the Finale Viga race and saw how they do it over there. And he came back and I spoke to him in March, and he said he changed up his training completely. He's really tried to drop some weight. Like you say, he's a strong, powerful guy. He's tried to lose some of that muscle mass, but still get some serious miles under his leg. Because he realized he has to pedal these huge distances each day.
Yeah.
And then have ultimate output.
Yeah.
4 or 5 times a day. Not just once for 3 minutes, but now 4 or 5 times, maybe 6 times, for up to 10 minutes, maybe more at some races.
You need to have that power to weight output, right? You know, you need to be efficient. Your engine needs to be efficient for what you are to go forward. So it's
so he's mixed it up, and like you say, he's changed up his bikes as well, and that's going to be really interesting to see as well. I'm really intrigued. I hung out with him a bit in Sedona, where the trail is flat and wide open, and he's obviously very fit, obviously really strong, obviously really fast. I mean, he's a terror. Like, he's a wrecking ball going down the trail.
He's flat out. He's flat out. You can see that, actually, in the Goldstein Productions edit that came out that he did for Red Bull earlier this spring. On a wide open, you know, fire road or riverbed, you hear him coming before you even see him. He is moving quick. You know, he's that thunder. It's like sitting on the side of the track when Nathan Rennie used to come by.
But
it sounds like a train.
But the difference is, this is the interesting thing, he's got that ability to get up to speed and sustain that speed. However, part of enduro is going to be creating momentum.
Yeah. Like,
there's no flow on a trail.
Very much so.
It's going to be interesting not to do with his bike, but how he does that, how he does that with his bike. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Between him and Ben Cruz, I think they are two top North American picks.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they play out and get in there, because I think the depth of talent for European races is really deep. And I think we're going to be kind of surprised. There's a lot of races out there that we're not hearing a great deal of. Nico Lau?
Yeah.
He won the Trans-Provence when we were there, and every single rider, Jerome Clemence, Nico Williams, Fabien Barrel, they were all saying, like, you've got to watch out for this guy. You've got to watch out for this guy. He's so quiet. He's so unassuming.
Yeah.
But he just, like you said earlier, he's a workman. He just gets down to business.
Tactician.
He's been doing it for a lot of years, and he's still young, though.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see the different faces come out from it.
And that's it. We don't have a blueprint for this, you know. We don't know what to expect. They've done all these rounds here and there, but it's never been on this main stage. And I think, you know, jumping into kind of our next person who's been on the main stage is Dan Atherton. You know, brother of G. Atherton, the oldest of the Atherton Racing Group. He raced downhills. You know, had some success with that, but not to the same success that his brother and sister are feeling with it. You know, had an unfortunate incident, and another rider that's kind of downhills moving at such a fast pace, pace that they maybe weren't able to keep up to. Enduros come in, and it's a perfect slot in for them. It's a nice lateral move, but I feel with like Dan, it's a lateral move to where he is podium contender each and every week. Rather than I'm going for a top 20 at the World Cup, he is going to be there, and he's going to be the guy that's battling for those. And you know,
he's a rider that's transitioned over, like you say, from forecast and downhill, which is what we're seeing a lot of riders fresh doing this year. But he's had 2 years of doing this.
Yeah.
He's had 2 years of getting to all the European races. He's been doing the Manipel, the Mega, which although aren't the Enduro races, if you're going to pick at it, he has got a very rounded Enduro experience. He knows it now. Like, he's got it in his head. He's got it in his body. He's had the time to adjust and figure it out.
Yeah.
That's why I think we're going to see a lot of these new faces turning up this year that maybe aren't quite ready and ripe for it.
Yeah.
They will be, and they've got the potential as their professional athletes, their professional races, their professional winners. But it's going to be an adapting process this year.
We're guys that are just going to straight up come in, and I think we're going to see it. We're guys are going to blow the socks off all the other riders on certain stages, and then just not be able to repeat that, you know? With the Enduro format, we're looking at anywhere from, what, 1 to 5, 6, 7 stages throughout that weekend or day that they're going to have to race. And, you know, some of these guys are going to come out and probably maybe in the first couple of stages lay down the law. And, you know, I think the older guys are just going to know to sit back, relax. You know what? This guy's probably going to blow up, or he's going to have, you know, he's going to have an unfortunate incident. I mean, you're going to need to attack the course, but you can't attack it like a World Cup caliber course. You can't just go balls out for those 3 minutes and then you're going to still have to transition, say, 10 kilometers to the next stage, feel fresh for it, regroup, recharge, and then drop back into it. So
yeah, I went to Nice in France in February, and I got to ride with Jerome, Clemence, Fabien Barrel, and Caroline Chazon. And I got to follow them down some of the trails in a simulated race environment. And it was a mini enduro races for media hacks, which basically meant that it was just a way for us all to just bumble our way down the hill and eat nice meals and feel like we were doing a job. Anyway, we got to follow people like Fabien down the trail, and it was brilliant. He's like a co-pilot. He's calling out, here, take this rock here on the left, take the high line, now you turn in one pedal, now you go, let go brakes, fire, now go, go, go. And it's unreal. He's there 10 meters in front of you on the trail, sometimes 40, 50, because you're getting dropped.
Sometimes at the bottom.
It's unreal. But you're trying to hold it, and every time I get to the bottom stage, I'll be like, oh, man, I'm sorry, I'm sucking. Sorry that I was holding you up, but thank you for waiting and for giving me those instructions, because it was the most brilliant learning experience for me to hear from that guy and Jerome and how to ride. Anyway, he would always tell me, he'd say, no, I'm not going that much faster in the races. And I was like, really? Yeah, I know how it is. They have to try and make these media people like,
no, hey, it's all good, man.
Let me rub your ego. Yeah. Here, let me cut the balls. That's fine.
Make sure you write a good, you know, make sure you write a good report about my sponsor's equipment.
That's his job. He's smart. But you know what? The more I start to realize, like, you talk to these people and they realize they're not racing at 100%. It's not like a downhill where every single stage they're hitting 100%. You do 100%, the chances of you getting mechanical or crashing or just fatiguing out in the day is grows hugely. So Jerome Clemence would always say, I probably only ride maybe 80% when I'm racing.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's riding 80% of his maximum speed, but he's riding 80% smart.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, 100% smart, but 80% of his speed, because he's just picking lines.
60% of this time, it works 100% of the time.
I think 60% of the time, I actually get my words out 100% of the time. But he's just riding very smart. You watch him, he's not just pedaling all the time.
They're very surgical how they work their way down the trail. I mean, that's how Barrel won world championships. He did everything in his power to win those, and that's another one of these guys. He's a bit older. He's not the youngest guy on the circuit. You know, he could still... The sad thing with him is he could still go out and win a World Cup downhill. I mean, he proved that in his final season before he retired. And I think it shows very a lot of class with the French, which is he could still win, but he couldn't win or train on the level or put in the effort that he knew he needed to put in to win, and he stepped back for it. Very much the same as ACC, right? Did it, done it, decided not anymore, they can't just continue to put that in. But I think with Burrell this year, I mean, this guy's a tactician. He is a bike handler. He's very forward thinking. This is a guy that would, I mean, you look at the Monraker when he was, you know, working with Cesar Rojo to produce that bike, longer front triangles, zero degree stems, direct mount stems. It's going to be very interesting.
A lot more companies coming out with this, starting to figure that stuff out. You're right. Like, I was talking to someone today, Fabien Burrell. He's a philosopher.
Yeah.
He's an engineer. It's absolutely magical, like, seeing that guy, like, make his ideas clear.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, the way he says things.
He's very articulate with how he tells, you know, especially...
his second language.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. Very, very much so. So, you know, with somebody like him, I see they're going to come in, and I think he's gonna do very well with this type of racing this year. And
well, he won Lake Garda.
That's very true. He won Lake Garda, and he's going to be, you know, he's riding a new bike. He's riding for the Canyon team, which is a little different, again, for North American people. That's not a name that they're, you know, they're used to. So it's going to be interesting being in North America. Are we going to see a huge push for these European-based brands to come over here? You know, it's not just going to be dominated by the likes of Giant, Trek, Specialized, and what's, you know, what you see in the bike magazines and what you see online. There's a lot of really good other bikes out there with good suspension designs and good, you know, good production value behind them.
Well, we're going to see Lapierre hit North America,
yeah,
very, very soon. I mean, they're here, and they've got some big backing. They're a very established French brand, and they have names like
The Alien, Nico Bouillot. Well, I mean, they've also got Sam Blenkinsop, Locke Bruni, I mean, Emily Rigaud. They've got a team, and for they're not guaranteed to be at each and every round. So unfortunately, right now, we do not have the exact start list for the first round, happening tomorrow. But we do know, you know, Sam Blenkinsop, he's registered to be at a few rounds. We don't know if he'll be racing tomorrow or not, but Nicolas Vuillos, I mean, what do we say about this guy? He is riding a 27.5 wheel, 650B Lapierre bike.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting, you know, following the online banter the last few days, especially tweets from riders. There hasn't been much talk about wheel size. He's one of the few people that's put pictures out there and full-heartedly stated, 650B, that's what I'm riding. That's it. That's his choice. So, I mean, what's your take on this, Seb?
I'm interested because I actually thought we were going to see a few more new bikes of this medium wheel size nonsense coming out. I really did. I was almost surprised that it came from Nico, especially that he's riding an aluminium bike. This guy is...
He's a tactician.
The tactician, but he's also OCD about his stuff. I mean, seriously, if he had double-butted or triple-butted spokes, he's the one that's going to notice. Like, he is so precise. That's why so many companies want him on board, because he can dissect a bicycle, every little part, and talk about it and explain why and say, this is how I felt on this train in this motion,
yeah,
when I was doing this. I mean, the guy is... next level. It's unbelievable. So I was pretty surprised not only to see him on 27.5 or /650V, but surprised to see him on an aluminium frame. He's been used to that is it the Spicy or the Zesty? I can't quite keep up with it. But either way, his bike, he's been on carbon for a bunch of years. He's been trying out the DI2 electronic suspension stuff.
He is on the RockShox suspension now.
He's a SRAM athlete.
He's a SRAM athlete. And there's that wheel testing video that went online the other day. It was interesting watching it. I mean, if you know, for our younger listeners, they probably won't know exactly what this guy did back in the day. And this guy went to any length possible to win a World Cup or World Champions. I mean, the only time he lost a World Championship when he raced was due to a flat tire.
Yeah.
That, and you know, he 10 jerseys, a couple as junior and then as senior. And, you know, listening to him in the video, he talked about he would ride his wheels almost fully tensioned off, just the bare amount that he needed. So he'd have the right flex within the bike, going through the right corners. You know, this is, with enduro, you can get as geeky as you want, as precise as you want with setup and everything. So he's chosen to ride a 27.5. He's on that brand new black box pike. He's on that program now.
Yeah.
And you know, Rorschach and them have all partnered with him. You know, this is a guy who has chosen he could be with anybody. He's partnered with them, and I'm guessing that they're probably giving him a lot of resources, and they're listening to him to design the next future product. Not is he just an athlete, but he's probably producing within the next couple of years. You're going to be able to go, Nikola Vuljos, put a stamp on that.
Well, there's two interesting things. You're right. Like, absolutely. One, for a bunch of years, he's still been racing. Maybe not as seriously. I mean, like I said earlier about Hank Allen, not maybe really, really putting the head into it, but still being incredibly successful for this enduro format. And he has, you know, if you looked at his bike the last few years, he did have kind of different setup. You know, there'd be some Shimano here, some SRAM there, some RockShox, a bit of Fox. Like, he ran whatever. Yeah. Like, 'cause he had the choice that he could run whatever. He would ask companies for stuff, but yeah. He didn't want to be sponsored because he just wanted the best. Like, he's the guy that would run the best, yeah. No matter. So that he's gone over to a full SRAM package, is it that he wants some money now? He's a potential enduro racer, or is it just that he's into that stuff? I don't know. It's interesting. The other interesting thing is he did say in that video he could do some very interesting things as a downhill athlete. He could detension those spokes so that you would get the right amount of flex. But that was just for 3 minutes. That was his race run, because there was a mechanic at the bottom of the run that could give him a new set of wheels, a new bike, or just work on his bike, and still he had hours between runs. Now with enduro, you've got to have a bike that is tough, resilient, strong, capable to really last a full day of
riding. You have to be self-sufficient, self-support yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, in the rules, it's what is it? You can't change frame. You can't change shock, I believe.
You can't change shock. I mean, there's lots of stuff, especially with this round this weekend. A lot of these guys are going to have to wear armor for the first time. They're having to abide by all these rules that normally, you know, they've just kind of gone with the flow. So there's some structure coming to the sport now.
I'm torn though. Like, it's interesting that the conditions they've been put under is more like an average Joe Blow kind of conditions. Their bike has to last for the day's ride.
Yeah.
Or for the weekend, or for the season, whatever it is. It's brilliant, because that's more like the bikes that me and you would ride. Like, they have to last. It's not just one-off specials for a particular race. They can't just get a geometry set just for this course. They can't just get a... You know, it's normal. However, you're going to lose some of that kind of special, interesting, geeky weirdness. I mean, this is what this show is about. We're absolute geeks for racing.
Yeah, very, very, very true. We're just trying to break it down and get you guys the behind-the-scenes stuff of what's going on, so...
What kind of bike do you have? You got Shox, Pegs, Rookie...
Welcome back to the Off Track Podcast. I'm Tristan Merrick, and along for the ride today is Bike Mag's own Seb Kemp.
Let's just cut to the chase right now. Young guys, who's your pick right now?
Josh Carlson.
Josh Carlson. Why do you pick
Aussie Josh Carlson. We've got some friends who grew up with him racing and riding. He has a moto background and a cross-country background. And so he rides cross country bikes like he's on a motocross bike. Not the other way
Sounds
around, because
like
that would be really dull.
Yeah.
But he had a very successful last year on the North American Enduro Series. He's now on the Giant Factory Team. Yep.
Whatever they exactly call themselves. Giant.
Giant.
It just says Giant on the trade team sheet here, so we'll just go Team Giant.
Yeah, we'll just obey the Giant, I think. Make sure there's a blue flash in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really think Josh Carlson is going to be one of the younger riders to watch out for, and it's going to be great to see a good Aussie get in there.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, I'm going to, looking through the list here, and especially of somebody that's going to be at all the rounds, I'm gonna throw Joe Barnes riding for the Canyon team. I mean, I kind of feel like I'm shooting fish in a barrel with that one. We know he's fast.
That's a smart pick.
We know he's terribly fast. He's had good success on the downhill bike. And it's cool to see a younger rider just adopt to a new race series. And it's going to be interesting how that goes for him this year. You know, we know he can ride on the edge. But can he ride on the edge over six different stages and recover and transition and keep his bike in one piece? You know, he's coming from a very heavy downhill background where he would need the last 3 minutes, just get it to the finish line, get it between the tape, and the mechanics there to prepare it.
But, you know, at the same time, like, he's always been a bit of a privateer and a bit of a gypsy. He might have been racing the World Cups, but he ran it out of his own truck and he had
a... Well, I hear he's sleeping in a van right now at Pundala. Like, he's in the woods doing his own program.
He's always come from very modest backgrounds. He's been very self-sufficient, and even when his downhill days. But he's been doing this for a few years. He has been exploring and experimenting. And last year we really saw him transition over and have some pretty good results. This year already, at Lake Garda, he had some stellar results on stages. But he punched, and all of a sudden, you're off the list. One puncher in one of these races, just like a downhill race, you're not going to appear anyway. And so I think it's a very shrewd pick to go for Joe Barnes.
Yeah.
He is smart. He's very fit. He's small. He's lithe. He's very nimble, like a Jerome Clements.
Is this a guy that's going to take advantage of the rules? Maybe something's not taped. Inside corners go inside. I mean, I have to bring up that point. Like, you know,
he's definitely been the opportunist. Center of lots of controversy regarding taping and cornering, and he's just a cheeky wee Scotsman who says if it's not taped, then you take the corner. And I kind of understand where he's coming from. But hey, let's keep to the trail.
Yeah.
Keep to the trail. There's a big, dirty, brown snake in front of you. No, yeah, there's always going to be instances where there's a gray area, but come on, let's just stick to the trail. Let's be the fastest one down that trail. We're mountain bikers, especially with this enduro thing. We're going to be on trails that aren't necessarily mountain bike trails. They're going to be shared by a lot of other users. If people start cutting inside these corners, you're changing the face of that trail, and you're going to maybe cause erosion. I don't want to be one of those Sierra Club shouters right now, but like, come on, let's just keep it on the course.
Yeah.
Joe Barnes, I think, he's been the center of some interesting stuff, but
it'll be interesting to see if he changes Zach with the Enduro World Series, right? I think a lot of these riders, they need to realize they invest back into the sport, and they support the sport. It's going to grow rather than damage its reputation right away. You know, there's a couple riders out of there have already kind of thrown out a few different tweets, and we haven't even seen the first round yet. And it's unfortunate. You know, we'll keep those people nameless at this point, but it's interesting to see if they're going to buy into it or if they're just viewing this as a way to continue on getting a paycheck and continue on going, you know, having a form of racing to work with. But let's switch gears. Let's just do some wrap ups right now. What's your pick, female, overall, end of the year?
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the female races. There's some very good races out there. I think it would be madness not to have Anne-Caroline Chazon as your number one pick with female Enduro World Series champion, because she's been doing this. She's been, I think, unbeaten for the last 2 years doing enduro when she's kind of been doing it as a bit of fun and games.
That's
now
very
she's
true.
Got her head down. It's going to be unreal.
Well, then we've got Tracy Mosley, which we've seen in pictures. She's racing a prototype Trek Remedy 29er, which is
interesting.
You know, like you said, you know, we were talking beforehand with the podcast. It's very interesting. Trek doesn't currently create that in a 29er. They've decided to build one. Is she testing this? Is this something that was a special request? Are we going to see more of it? Have they bought into the, you know, not to say the 29er craze, but have they bought into it?
I think it's good to see that they're trying. I was sure that they were going to come out with a 650B bike, and I was sure we were going to see Trek this weekend with a 650B bike.
Yeah.
I'm actually pretty happy to see them trying a 29-inch bike. It'll be interesting to see how the Remedy platform and how Trek decide to geo-spec and part-spec it work out, but I think that's pretty brave, and if it's a fast track, that could be a really good bike. Tracy Mosley, very experienced racer, and she knows enduro. She's putting her head down to this. I think there's another
she's got good racecraft. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got that, and then we cannot forget about Anik Burton riding for the Specialized team. Forecross is dead. I mean, it's still racing, but Forecross is dead. She decides to no longer race that anymore. Another, you know, one of these athletes that has just gone quick little sidestep, one part of the mountain biking sport to the other part. She's had some pretty good success so far, but she hasn't faced Tracy. She hasn't faced ACC. Could it be a real wake-up call this weekend? Is it going to be, yeah, you know what, maybe she's third place or second place, but is there a pretty decent-sized gap in between there? And I, you know, not to say it right away, but I don't know if she has that power and those guns to stick up with that, you know, to try and keep pace. I mean, ACC is, I mean, she's a living legend. But she's decided to keep racing. So, and, you know, Anik's going to have her hands full with that.
It's interesting, the Specialized team that they picked on their factory team, they've got Anik Bertin and Michael Prokop as well, another four-cross rider who's in a post-Olympic year. There's no BMX going on, four-cross is dead, and he's come over to enduro. I saw that guy at Seattle. Scary. He's about 9 feet tall and about 6 feet broad across the shoulders. Like, you would not want to meet... Like,
he could bench press the entire gym.
Pure grizzled meat, like, top to tail. Not a hair on him, like, scary looking. Bench presses a lot of people.
Yep.
But, so that, I'm really interested to see how those two get on, transitioning over. Other women, come on, you can't miss out.
No, it's...
Anke Martin. Oh. She's been doing it for years.
Very
she
true.
She knows what she needs to do to get into there as well. She's very smart. She's smarter than a lot of people give her credit for racing. And I think she's going to be one that's up there consistently buzzing around. At the same time, though, it's not going to change her world. She's a very smart person. She realizes the racing isn't the be-all and end-all, but I'll tell you, if it comes down to it, she's going to put 100% into it.
Sounds about right. And, you know, let's just do the recap. Guys, where do we see guys at the end of the year? What are we going to expect? I mean, looking at this list right now, I mean, we could talk for hours about each and every person. You know, Jerome Clements, Curtis Keane, Nicholas Lau, Vullios, Burrell. There's all these, you know, token names. But then, we've talked about, there's all these names that I'm looking at. They don't ring a bell, but they could be at the end of the weekend. These guys might not only just get stage wins, they could pull one out of the bag when it comes to the end of this. So, I mean, damn, I just missed even Jared Graves. I mean, there's all these guys that are on there. So, I mean, what's your top, you know, what are your top two guys? I'm not going to ask for your top three at the end of the year because we just don't know what's going to unfold. But two guys that you see that are going to be there through the grind of all seven rounds.
Jerome Commons. It has to be. The guy has been doing this for 10 long years. If you want to sweat this fight, his tears. Like, the guy is so smart, such a good rider, fit as a butcher's dog.
Yeah.
You'd be mad to bet against him.
Yeah.
And you know what? I really like him as a person, a human being. And you know what? I like that. I like to support people that seem to be good people.
What's your second place? I mean, we're not picking the podium right now. I think as we get through
the year. No, because I'm saying Jerome Clements. I'm putting that on the table right now.
Stamp it?
Yes. I'll stamp it. Overall, Jerome Clements.
Okay. And when we do the race recap at the end of the season, we're going to see.
Second.
We're going to hold you to that one.
Second. Oh, now that's hard. Like you say, there's a big pool you can pick from. And everybody is going to have Jerome's target on their back. Sorry, everyone's going to see that Jerome's got the target on their back.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. See if people like Nico Lau.
Yeah.
Remy Absalom is going to come through. He's a great mega launch winner. See if he gets... I'd like to see Ben Cruz do some more as well. I think if we can hold it together, it could be easier. What about you?
Well, for my sake of, you know, not jumping on the, you know, all your guys are good. I mean, Jerome, absolute legend through and through. That's a hard one. I've been scratching my head the last few days because I knew we were going to get to this point in the show where I'm going to have to pick somebody and I don't want to waffle on it. End of the year, I mean, I not to jump on the same as you, but I think I'm going to pick Burrell. I'm going to pick Burrell as being that guy at the end of the year. And, you know, French rider has been there, done it, knows what needs to happen to get through the entire season. Is going to last the grind. He's going to know that he's going to lose stages, that he's going to go to the start gate, and he knows he's not going to be the top guy at that stage. But he is going to race because he knows he's got another five stages after that to get through the day. And it's, at the end of the day, it's the fastest guy that wins. So I pick Brel as my number one pick with that. You know, I don't want to stamp it, but I think he would be there. And then second guy, I have to pick him. It's going to be very interesting how it plays out, but Curtis Keane. Can the North American go into a European market, a European race circuit? We already know he's going to kick some serious ass when he comes to Crankworx Whistler. We know he's going to do good when he's in Colorado. But can he go to Europe? Can he go conquer Europe? I mean, there's some companies that have invested a lot of money into him this year. I mean, Specialized has sunk money into him. There's also now, you know, within this new sport, battle of the helmet covers, you know.
Mm.
Red Bull signed into him. You know, not only is Red Bull signed into him, Monster signed into Jerome.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We need these, you know. At the end of the day, we know these guys aren't sipping Monsters and Red Bulls on the podium or at the after party. We know at the end of the day, they're going back training and eating clean and keeping up with their program is going to be key throughout the whole year. But it's cool
to
see.
Are they clean?
Yeah.
Are they clean? Do we want to get into that in this episode?
For the sake of where we're at, I mean, we're already about an hour and 10, hour and 15 in. I think we need to...
Let's wrap it up.
I think
so. What you're saying is it's going to be Curtis Keane versus Brel and Jerome Clément in the Battle of the Pacific. Curtis Keane firing in on his 29-inch Super Fortress, and Jerome Clément and Fabien Brel in their little Fokkers.
Yeah,
oh, that's in German, but well,
yeah.
Fabien's going to be flying the Fokker.
Very true. Very true. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of it. We've wrapped things up. This is the pre-race show. This is the Off-Track Show, presented by BikeMag.com. Again, I'm Tristan Merrick. I'll be the host throughout the entire year. We've got Seb Kemp. He's going to be we're not going to have him next Monday, but next Monday we'll be having our show. We'll have Jeremiah Bubar in. And again, just to keep you guys up to date, you can connect with us at off_trackMTV. That's on Twitter. But make sure you follow us on Instagram. Sven Martin will be taking all of our photos. That's off_track. And Monday is our next show. So I think without further ado, that's it. Any final words, Seb?
Can't wait for the weekend. Opening day.
Opening day. Bike park. Woo! But thanks for joining us, folks. And we will catch you later on.